cliffcentral.com.
Yebo, cliffcentral.com. It is a Monday morning. It's already the 18th of October. Oh, hell. You see, it's now starting to wind down. We heard in the Collectomania ad in the middle of the break there, all about collecting Christmas decorations. I think that was Jasmine Mulholland. And it's not going to be long before you go into the shops and you start hearing the Christmas music and you see the decorations up. Some people have already seen them. So it's already happening.
But people are probably going to have to work through Christmas, huh? It's been the pandemic, economy.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
I don't think people, who are these people that can afford to take off? No. Unless I'm crazy.
I don't think there's a lot of that going on. I was thinking about it and I wanted to make plans for December, but I actually think it's probably going to be just from a, you know, just financially and even in terms of, you know, if travel does open up again, I'd rather go on a nice holiday next year than try and squeeze everything in this year. And end up spending unnecessary money doing dumb stuff, you know. I think rather save up if you can. And even if you don't go on holiday, at least you're saving some money. It's a sensible way to go. That's probably the plan. Anyway, we'll take a little break over Christmas. But, I mean, the fact that we're talking about Christmas already, it's just terrifying. It feels like just yesterday we started a brand new year, you know. So it's wild. So there's a lot going on, and we're going to get into some of the news and some of the things that have been happening in South Africa and in your life and on TV and everywhere else. I've got some suggestions on watching some new series over the weekend, which I'll obviously, before I can start to endorse them, I'll have to watch some of it myself. I realize, though, I don't watch a lot of TV compared to a lot of people. I really don't, and I maybe need to catch up on some stuff. What are you doing, Leanne? What does your weekend consist of?
The past or the future?
No, what did you do this weekend?
Oh.
Besides get cyber-hacked.
That dominated the weekend. It really did. Still sorting out things and still crisis meetings this morning. It really was a big thing in my life. So, but yeah, that comes with being a social media manager. But what I have been doing is doing a little bit of property searches. Talking about COVID, etc.
Yeah,
you know, there comes a point where you have to reassess what was instilled in you as a young person. So for me, what was really instilled was the value of property and the fact that owning property was of utmost importance.
Yep.
For financial security. And just the same as we were brought up in an era where having a university degree was extremely important, and that's what you did. You went to school, then you went to varsity. And how that's changed now. Just in the same way, the outlook on property has changed.
Yeah.
And I'm having to it's been very difficult to tear myself away after 40 years of believing that property is the be all and end all when it comes to financial security and financial development. I've had to relook at things and think it's not the end of the world to let go of an asset in the form of property. And to rent instead. You know, it was almost a swear word when I was growing up, saying that you would pay somebody else's bond if you rented a property.
Yes.
But if you look at, you know, you have to assess your situation. There was also, in my mind, the ideal world was growing up like my parents did. So you start off battling and then you get a job and you get a house and then you have a family. And then way down the line, you downgrade to something smaller when you're in your retirement. However, my situation is completely different to my parents. I don't have children. I don't have a partner. And so this feeling of having to upgrade every time, get a better car, get a better house, I've had to reassess that. And it's been quite a challenge for me mentally. And so this weekend, I spent a lot of time looking at what my property would be valued at, what it's being sold for. I mean, essentially, are you thinking I rattle around in my home.
Yeah, are you thinking of downscaling and just living in circumstances which are more sensible for your current state of being, for your current environment, for your current relationship status, the space you actually need?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have a freestanding house with a big garden, lots of maintenance costs, and I'm rattling around in here. I use less than half of the space myself. And I'm paying two security companies, a lot of electricity to run the place, a lot of water, high rates. So I'm now reassessing things, and it is very difficult for me to let go. And the fear as well is, oh my gosh, if I sell an asset and start renting, I'll never own an asset again, because to get back in there is difficult, you know, as a single income household. To try and get a bond is more challenging. And it's letting go of that fear. So that's what I've been working on. I know it's
interesting.
You know what? I'm blown away by this. It's really, really, I think it's a thing that many people are thinking about. Many people are starting to take very seriously, because the way we live has changed, right? So even if, I mean, for example, if you're a millennial who likes traveling, then having property is just not a really important part of your existence. It's not something that you prioritize. If you don't have a family, why do you need a whole lot of space? The idea that property, and this is a hundreds of years old idea, that you have to own property to be a person of value. I mean, it comes from the old idea that property owners, who, by the way, only constitute, I think it's 1 or 2% of the world's population, this idea that you need to own land in order to be important is ridiculous.
It's so 1700s.
Correct. It really is.
Like the lord of the county.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be the lord of the manor, and you have to have, you know, rolling lands, and you have to have peasants working on those lands. This is a very medieval way of thinking about things. Most people just want a place where they can live happily, safely, comfortably, and they don't need a whole lot. They don't need a lot of things. It's so interesting you brought this up, because I was thinking exactly that walking up the stairs. I was thinking about how most people live, how I live, how my parents live, all that kind of thing, and thinking there's probably a really good argument for just having less.
Yes.
Just living more cleanly, more simply.
I think
scaling back in order to, for me, it's in order to recover from a disastrous COVID period financially.
But
payback loans, Bolelo, start Bolelo, fresh.
You're one of those people who argues for this.
So my thing is this, and it's so interesting what Leanne was saying, is my mom in particular, more and more, she's got which is an interesting thing considering her profession. But anyway, she's got a hoarding mentality, and I've been thinking about it over the last few years. Of my parents only got nice-ish things at like 40, 45 years old because they just come from rural families, and they had to smash it for myself and my sister and their families. And just so my parents never had anything nice. So my mom has this fear that I don't want to buy property. I'm like, no, for the next 10 years, whatever cent I have, I want to pump it into my business. And she cannot begin to understand what I'm saying. So Leanne, I do hear what you're saying, because it's very much a part of my life and is extremely fascinating, because my mom's coming to visit this week. I'm going to hear it all week, and it's just going to be a nightmare. Thank goodness I don't have a gun. But yeah, it's a really, really important thing that people need to hear, that you don't need property. And one of the things I always noticed with my mom, and I've had this conversation, it was difficult for her to accept, is she loves stuff, because it is that status thing, is I don't care about things. And it's brilliant that you've come to that, Leanne. In my opinion, minimalism all the way for me. I'm all about, what do I need? Let me get the best of that, and I'll have very few things, but I'll have the best of the very few things I have. And that's,
all right.
And it comes down to some very basic priorities, like security. I'm actually tired of lying in bed at night awake for 2 hours, unless I've self-medicated with wine to fall asleep, listening to every creak and crack in the house, wondering if there's going to be someone standing next to my bed. I'd rather take that away and live in a smaller place in a secure living unit.
Right, a lock up and go.
Priorities.
No.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel says property is the easiest way for most people to leverage an asset to grow capital. It also allows for intergenerational wealth transfer. That's all true. Carl says, okay, I'll bite. I disagree, he says. I'm 36. I own 3 properties shared, and I want to treble that before retirement. Property is safe and will help when I need the additional income.
Well, that's the thing. You need to be generating an income off of these properties. Yeah. And let me be clear, I fully understand income generation from properties, and that's purely because of my upbringing. And we do own some properties which during COVID were not generating income but are starting to shine again. And I do see the value in that. But when it comes to your personal space, your living space, there is a time when you need to adapt and say, I'm not going to have children. I don't need this extra space. And this is how much I'm spending on maintaining it and on security, et cetera. And I could downsize.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm quite fortunate to have two of the biggest dickheads in the world as family members, because they are both actuarial scientists, right? And listen, if anybody loves themselves as actuarial scientists, right? I don't know if you know any. Oh my God. Do me a favor. Anyway, both of them rent, and I've asked them why they continue to do this. And I know what my one cousin makes. It is scary that many zeros can be in a bank account. And she says, I can't put it how she puts it, but it's not intelligent to have property in this day and age. Let me dumb it down to that. Yeah. But she doesn't quite put it like that.
Well, there are lots of different opinions here, but it is interesting. Sadly, rentals are insane. I couldn't rent for what I pay on my bond, says Captain Cook. Michael says, while we're online, we're partially disconnected and disconnected from our immediate physical environment. This state likely discourages association with land as a value system. That's also true. Renting out property is soul destroying. Yeah, I don't want to be a I don't want to be a landlord. So I've got a property in Joburg that I don't want to own anymore. It's a ball ache to be that, you know, your primary residence, I understand, right? And if you're really, really wealthy and you've got some cash to throw around, a holiday home. But more than that, I don't know that being a landlord is necessarily a great way to live, because when something goes wrong on the property, it's your problem. You have to fix it, right? So that's a good point.
That's the other thing as well, where you can finally relax and call someone else when something happens. It's not your responsibility anymore.
Elon is God says, I'm 25. My parents have been pestering me about buying property. I don't know where they think I'm going to get the money for that. I'll pay rent until they die and hopefully inherit their shit.
Yeah. About those properties my parents run.
Yeah. Right.
But you also need the flexibility, right? For me, a big part of life is, especially since I don't have kids, where I am in my life for the next 10 years, I want to be nimble. Tomorrow, if I want to move to Finland, trying to get rid of an asset like a house, I mean, I'd rather give birth, right through my penis. It's painful stuff. It's painful stuff. Ugh.
Very frustrating. All right, so that's an interesting discussion and something I think a lot of people are playing with. I kind of get that Carl is making a valid point here too about property, because as someone else said in the comments, I'm going to try and find it quickly so I can give them credit. You have to have your own primary residence, because otherwise you will end up in trouble if the money runs out or whatever. You could end up being out in the street without a home. And no one wants that. That's probably the worst possible situation for anyone to end up in. So it's a balancing act. I don't think that COVID turned people off of their homes. I think it made them spend more money on their homes. You saw how many people are fixing things up around the house because they're spending all their time at home now. They're not going into the office as much. Although I think that's going to change. I think slowly people are gravitating back towards the office. So we'll have to see what happens. But it is interesting that there are these two very distinct camps about, no, you must own property. And on the other hand, absolutely not. Divest. Get rid of all of it.
I think it also, yeah.
Sorry, there's a rule. 95-year-old, I speak about it on the show all the time. She says the rule is always pay 3 months of rent ahead. Always. She forced me into this habit, and I always used to think she was crazy. For to address Carl's point, always pay 3 months of rent ahead. If you can't afford to do that, you can't afford your place. I was taught by a very wise woman, and that changed my life. So always,
so you obviously have a 3 month.
Always, I'm always 3 months ahead. No, I'm always 3 months ahead on my rent. Always, I pay.
But what I'm saying is, what happened? What is your notice period? Do you have to give 1 month's notice period to move out, or three?
1 month. 1 month. I'm happy.
So what happens with the two? What happens with 2 months?
If they're a terrible person then and they don't give my money back, so be it. But I'd always, because I can only control my behavior. I can't control what type of landlord they're going to be should things go wrong. At least I know for the next 3 months, I have that peace.
Yeah.
That I'm always 3 months.
I might want to scale it back a little and put that money into a separate account and hold it there. But yeah, I hear your point.
Hey, listen. It also depends on, you know, like Dr. Hanan was saying, with kids, you have to decide what their currency is. Like if you prioritize safety over everything else, you want to live in a secure complex or estate where you've got guards at the gate, where you share the costs of security cameras and alarms and all the stuff that would cost way too much if you had to do it in your private house. And maybe you want to live on the top floor where there's only one entrance and one exit, where you have a door or a gate that you can lock, that you can go to sleep at night, not having to worry about all that shit. I mean, there's no such thing as complete safety. That's a joke, because there will always be someone who sees an opportunity. But you can certainly make it easier for yourself if security is your number one. If you want space, you need a garden, you want, you know, your kids to play, you want your animals, you'll want all that stuff, then you need to have a garden. Then you need to prioritize that, maybe. If you want lots of rooms because you entertain people or because you have a large family, then that's another thing you've got to consider. And there are options for everybody. I think the property market is really, really interesting because it's curious to me to see what the demand is at the moment, what people are buying and what they're not buying. Maybe it's time we get a property expert on to actually talk about this, to say, look, what if the trends been and how have the trends emerged since COVID? What are people doing now? Are they downscaling? Are they upscaling? Are they moving into different neighborhoods? What's actually going on?
And on the business front, sort of a friend of mine owns is one of the owners of a boutique business property. What do they do? They're like lease them out, and they're experts at doing that whole
commercial
thing.
Property
brokerage. Brokerage. It's the brokerage. So we'll get him on as well. They've just both won the awards as the best in SA, so we'll see if we can get him on as well to see what businesses are doing.
And commercial property has changed the most during COVID. We know that 60% of I'm being conservative, of Sandton's commercial properties are standing empty. And those cost money to run.
Pretty wild.
So, my logic is telling me, okay, rent your private residence, but buy something in the commercial property space. But that's all out the window now.
Just before we get to Collect Mania, I tell you the most insane story that happened to me this weekend.
Yeah, go on.
As I was driving back in my Uber to the airport yesterday, this guy, I don't know how we got to this point. I had to go to the police station to get something certified just before I left. And he told me, oh, you go to the police station. That's interesting. I've been in a holding cell there. I was like, oh, my God, what did you do?
Your Uber driver said, was put in a holding cell. Okay.
So my immediate response, because I'm a douchebag, was, what did you do? And he said, no. Let me explain to you what happened. So I don't know if you know anybody that's had this happen. This guy was in an Uber, picked up these clients from Sea Point, right? Then they got stopped and the police were just searching them. They were doing random searches. So the Uber riders had cocaine on them, right? And then when the cops asked them, where did you guys get it? They pointed to the Uber driver. They put it on him. He spent the entire weekend in jail. He says it was like a couple of months ago. And these are some rich kids from Sea Point, apparently. And he says, no, they had a lawyer. They just spent that night and they were out the next morning. And interestingly, when these kids that got there, the police said, oh, it's you guys again. Isn't that insane? The guy spent time in jail.
Disgusting.
Because these kids told the cops that he's a cocaine dealer.
Oh, my Lord.
It's insane.
I know we talk about our own self-protection and self-awareness when we use these transport systems, but geez, these guys go through hell themselves.
Jesus.
Jeepers creepers.
You know, I have to tell you.
What?
I have such, there's a fury that builds up inside of me. When I think of like spoilt little kids who've been caught with coke in the Uber, blaming the Uber driver, and this poor dude who's trying to earn a living gets, you know, I sometimes get into cars of these Uber drivers and I think they've had to put up with like people vomiting and people changing their mind about where to go, people shouting
at them.
I mean, there was this horrific video of this Uber driver in Washington, D.C. a while ago. I think he was actually killed in a car accident because these two girls in the back of the Uber started screaming at him and hitting him and abusing him. And I think he lost his life. This is this year it happened. And you think these poor, and then of course they accused him of like the reason they attacked him was because he was racist to them or whatever. But it was just such a nonsense story. And I think about these poor guys who, and you know, many situations, you know, Uber driver is not the job everyone wants, but it does give you some autonomy, does give you some control over your own destiny. You do get to use your own car, and you know, there are certainly commercial benefits to being an Uber driver as opposed to being unemployed. But it's not an easy job, and you're dealing with people who either don't have their own transport or people who don't want to use their own transport. And very often you're treated like some kind of rubbishy chauffeur. And I think people are just so rude. They have so they're raised so badly that they don't know how to treat
how
people.
How very, very rude.
How rude. No. Imagine being an Uber driver. You have to put up with drunk people, mm-mm, stupid people, aggressive people. You know how people often will say, if someone's like behaving badly, whatever, I'm going to get you an Uber. You know, you hear this with like couples who fight with each other. And the wife is like, well, I'm getting you an Uber. You're going home to the husband. And the husband, now there's a poor Uber driver who has to put up with this drunk husband or stupid husband.
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible. It's not on at all. Don't like it.
It's a good point. Oh, my God. You've just created a scenario in my mind. Because like I do with the cashiers, for me, with Uber drivers, respect. It's like, I know your world is horrible. You know, I'm going to sit in the back, put my earphones in. Please listen to whatever you're listening to on the radio.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin your day by annoying you and talking to you about my life like you care because you've got stuff going on.
Oh.
Sir, let's agree. You're
that's
get
the worst.
You go safe.
I don't even, you know, you don't want to sit and talk to the poor guy. And it's just, it's very annoying. Very annoying. I'm sorry.
Or him.
Don't bother him.
Or him or him, yeah.
All right, it's almost time for us to check in on Collectomania, which, as you know, is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. You can check them out at Scoin, that's S with, or coin with an S in the front of it, .com, scoinshop.com. Remember, if you're a collector of anything interesting or unusual and you want to share your collection with us, tell us about it. Contact at cliffcentral.com, and then we'll feature you on the show on Collectomania. We'd like to hear from you. We're going to get to that in a second. I just want to quickly look at some of these comments. Trevor says, on the other hand, Uber drivers are a big part of the Coke distribution network in Cape Town today. That's quite possible. That's quite possible.
So maybe he lied to me. All right, Trevor. Maybe the guy's a liar and I should have punched him in the face.
Robin says something very controversial. 70s and early 80s babies are the last generation with morals. I don't know about morals, but I'd say maybe manners. And then people saying, there's the old saying in consumer law, this is from Tracy, huur gaat voor koop. Tenants do have more rights than the actual owner. Mm-hmm. That's actually true. And you will experience that if you're a landlord.
And also just on that point, remember that it doesn't have to be permanent, the solution.
Yes.
It may fit you just for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, it just suits you for the short term.
Doesn't have to be permanent.
Just before we move, before we move on from the Uber drivers, I've noticed that there is an epidemic of drivers who have an L in their back window. Learner drivers, supposedly. But then, but when you drive past them, you could see that they're probably in their 40s or whatever. People who keep an L in their back window and then just drive like assholes. They either drive very slowly or they're very like jittery. They indicate and then turn the opposite way, like morons. It's, I think the L has become almost like the hazard lights. You know, a lot of people.
Think, no, you,
I think a lot.
You know
of,
what it is.
A lot of people
it's
think
parents.
I don't know.
It's parents who are who have learner children and they don't remove the L.
Well, they must remove the L. Listen, I couldn't wait to remove the L. I was so embarrassed to have an L in the back of our window when my mother was teaching me how to drive. I said, please, just I'd rather get people hooting at me. I'd rather not be the L. It's like loser in the back of your window. Please do me a favor and take those L's off. Or else just get off the fucking road. No one wants to have you on there.
I remember when I took my license, the learner's book was this enormous A4 book, and at the back cover was the learner L that you could cut out. And nobody used those because they were so big. And I didn't give two shits. I drove around with this enormous L until it was – because I'm compliant.
I know. That's the big problem here is that you are compliant. That has always been our biggest problem on this show is that Leanne is so compliant. Do you still have an e-toll tag?
I do.
Oh, my God.
And I don't pay it, though.
Ooh, that's controversial.
Oh, word.
Oh. Mm. Oh, anyway, when
if you're a lunatic, make the L yellow, because if you are a crazy person, please let us know. If you're capable of anything, you know, we've got to keep the following distance. Maybe make the L yellow, just so we know that you're absolutely nuts.
It's so amazing.
Because I'm enjoying my life. Like, I don't want to die.
People want to have an L in their back window. People want to wear identifying marks. I hate that stuff. Like the minute you tell me I have to comply with something, I'm the opposite of Leanne. It's like, don't tell me to put an L in the back window. I don't want to put your L in my back window. Thank you very much. And yet there are people who want to keep it in there as long as possible. Yesterday, I promise you, driving back from KZN, it was all good. Lovely trip back. Hardly any traffic. No major issues. Took exactly the amount of time that I expected it to. But once I got to Joburg, a whole lot of these L drivers suddenly pitch up out of nowhere and drive really slowly and really stupidly. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, it's time for Collectomania. So let's turn our attention to Dean. He's got a collection of flight gear, and we tracked him down, and we decided we would speak to him. So Dean is a self-confessed military aviation junkie. He's collected over 50 helmets. Yep. Many with masks, 15 G suits, including an example of the first South African-made G suit, 19 flight suits, 7 life preservers, 2 survival suits, and various goggles, boots, gloves, headsets, survival jackets, and flight jackets. Hey, Dean, you nutcase. How are you?
Gareth, yeah, thanks very much, and thanks for having me. Morning.
No, I don't think you're a nutcase. There's so many of us who collect strange stuff, and I mean, I'm one of them, so I'm in no position to criticize you. So, Dean...
Yeah, please speak to some of my friends.
Yeah, I will, because I'm absolutely sure you have friends who collect even more weird things than you do. This is a pretty unique thing to be collecting, though, and I can see some of them on the back, in the back of your picture now. There's a flight
suit. Yeah, I invited a friend, a visitor, too.
You got some creepy guy standing in the background with a helmet... And a flight suit on. All right,
I'm hoping it will help with any potential break-ins.
Bro, that'll frighten the hell out of me. If I woke up in the middle of the night and that thing was standing in the passage, yeah, I think I'd be a little bit frightened. Yeah. So, Dean, tell us how it all started. How did you begin collecting, and where did this interest stem from?
Well, I've been really interested in aircraft aviation flying ever since junior school. Mm-hmm. And I think if you track down some of my school buddies, I think the only thing they'll remember about me is that I never stopped talking about aeroplanes. Mm-hmm. And I did my national service in the Air Force in the late 80s.
Right.
And fortunate to get into the Air Force. And I managed to acquire one or two surplus items at that stage.
Yeah.
And then I carried on with life, and I started a website on the Air Force in 1994. Mm-hmm. That was when the internet was still in its infancy. The website's still going strong, saairforce.co.za. Carried on with my love of aviation flying, started writing articles for various local and national magazines, and so on. And arising from the website... a whole lot of people would contact me to say their fathers, their grandfathers used to serve in the Air Force during World War II and so on. And they've passed on, and they want to find out more details about that person. So that got me started to thinking maybe I should publish a book on people's experiences in the Air Force. And so I chatted to a whole lot of people with experiences from pre-World War II all the way up to the guys currently serving in the DRC. And that book on the personal experiences of people in the Air Force was published a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then about 3 years ago, the bug of collecting flight gear hit again. I found one or two of the items which I had still in storage. And I thought, ah, let me carry on with this. And ever since then, my bank balance has been depleting at a steady rate.
So Dean, I mean, first of all, is it possible to get all this stuff? Because a lot of it is military equipment. And, you know, for some civilians, that's not allowed. It's very, in some countries, if you're in possession of uniforms, flight suits, helmets, that kind of thing, they often look at you like some kind of criminal because you shouldn't have those in your collection. So is it hard to get those here, or is it pretty easy for you?
You've got to be careful that it's not current South African Defence Force equipment, particularly uniforms. And particularly camouflage uniforms, is prohibited for private people to be in possession of current uniforms. But we've been quite lucky with the flight suits and so on that most of what we collect is out of service.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I have managed to acquire one or two items that, you know, are still in service,
right,
such as boots or gloves and that kind of thing. But it doesn't appear to be an issue. I don't try to pass myself off as a current pilot.
The reason, just to explain to people who might be thinking, well, why would that be a problem? Obviously, you can't impersonate a military member of the military, a soldier or a pilot or any of those things, because obviously there are security concerns around that. Most people only accept that someone is in the armed forces if they can see them in the uniform, right? So if you're collecting the uniform, they may mistake you for being someone in authority, and you could probably do all kinds of nefarious things.
That's right, exactly. I think people, if I walk around in the local shopping center and dressed up like the gentleman behind me, well, mind you, in these COVID days, they might actually...
Yeah, people probably think you were just being extremely cautious, you know, like those people who wear the mask and the face visor and earmuffs and God knows what else, because I've seen a few of those around. So, Dean, let's just talk about the actual items in your collection for a second. I got a couple of pictures here, and we're going to share these with everybody, and you can just talk us through some of them. So, first of all, those helmets on the shelf behind you. Let's take a look at those. What do we got here?
Yes. Well, on the very left is a leather helmet dating back to 1937.
Wow.
I should mention that because there's quite a lot of World War II collectors out there. So I've kind of concentrated my collection from 1945 to current.
Yeah.
But I have acquired this 1937 one with goggles. I must point out that those goggles on there is fake goggles. It's the only fake item in my entire collection, but I thought it just suited this particular item. And you can actually see attached to it is like two metal tubes attached.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see that.
Pieces or tubes.
Mm-hmm.
And those in the early aircraft, where there were no electrics, there were no radios, intercoms. So that is how the pilots spoke to each other. They plugged it into a tube, and they literally shouted at each other into the other one's ear via this tube.
God, that's incredible.
Running between the two cockpits.
I wondered what that was, because I thought it can't be oxygen. You know, it's going to their ears.
No, that's right.
Oh, how incredible.
So,
all right. Are those ones on the left, the leather ones, is that the oldest one you've got?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
All right.
That's correct. Yeah. And then second from the left, that's a Type D Air Force flying helmet.
Mm-hmm.
That backs to the latter days of World War II with a Type H mask, if I get a little bit technical. And so that was used from the late World War II, in fact, all the way until the 1980s.
Yes.
And particularly the oxygen mask to the late 1980s. The helmet itself was into the 1950s, early 60s.
Okay.
And with a Mark 8 goggles. And then the third one from the left or second from the right, that's a Mark III helmet, also British in origin, same type of mask. And that actually had a leather inner. You can just cut like a gray leather cloth under it.
Yes.
And then this hard helmet out that covers it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was used from the early mid 60s.
Incredible.
To the 70s and so on.
And the last one there, is that the newest?
Yeah. That's a Geno 316. That's a very common one that was used in the Air Force from the mid 80s, early to mid 80s, all the way to the 90s. And in fact, in general squadron use.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that helmet is still being used today.
I think Leanne has one of those. She calls
Brand
it
a school.
Leanne has one of those. She calls it her sleeping Jesus. She actually uses that to sleep with.
Yeah, it's my CPAP machine. And I must say, I feel very at home with these guys on the shelf.
Exactly.
And the one behind you. Someone mentioned that I might be scared by the mannequin behind you. But I think he's more like my knight in shining armor, because we identify with each other with our pipes coming out of our mouths.
There's a lot of these that we can't go into too much detail on. But how many helmets?
Yeah, exactly.
How many helmets are there altogether?
I've got over 50 now.
My goodness!
Of the helmets.
Where do you store them?
In
boxes like this in the garage?
That's right. That's right.
Wow!
There's just too much space in the house to store them individually.
Yeah.
So the helmet, the garage is getting quite full. And I must all kudos to my wife, Jody. She's even allowed some of the overflow to be in the house. And I say, yes, at the end of the year, I'll have time. I will find space to pack them back again. I think speak to Elector and things happen.
Yeah, I always feel sorry for the husbands and wives of collectors, because they really have to put up with the most nonsense. They have to clear space in their house. They have to give up whole rooms sometimes for these collections to be housed. It's not easy being married to someone who collects stuff.
And the distinction, we are not hoarders.
Yeah.
These are collections. They're historical interest.
Yes.
I use them for research. Because actually, for each item that I collect, I'm actually researching and going into the history of each item. Sometimes I can actually identify the individual person who actually flew with the item.
Wow.
I've been in contact with some of them. And I'm actually planning on writing a book now on all South African Air Force flight gear since 1945. Wow. And I'm actually contacting like the survival section staff who served in and current. Used to or currently serving in the Air Force, manufacturers, distributors for information and so on. And it's actually quite amazing about in the 1980s, because of sanctions and so on, the amount of development that occurred in South Africa, just on, I think, very boring and plain vanilla flight suits and helmets and things.
Yeah.
But some of them were actually so technologically advanced that the one helmet you had in a picture, and I can actually show you my pride and joy.
Yes.
This particular one.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is that?
And this is and I've put the visor down and I can put the visor back up. You can't really see it.
We can see it in this
darkness.
Tremendous.
There we go.
Yeah.
And that is the very first operational helmet mounted sight used in the world. And that was in the early 80s. That was integrated on the South African Mirage 3s, which allowed the pilots just to look at the target, at the opposing aircraft, designate that aircraft with its air-to-air missile, and allow it to shoot the missile just by looking at the aircraft, instead of having to point the aircraft, wait for a tone and beep, and for the missile seeker to lock on. Yeah, the pilot would turn his head, look at the aircraft. Obviously, at that in those years, you couldn't look too far to the left or the right.
Yeah, sure.
But that was slave to the missile's infrared seeker, which would look for the heat of the exhaust. The seeker would then turn in the same direction.
Terrific.
And the pilot could then fire the missile. And this was hugely secret in those years. And in fact, I'm sure you've heard of Dieter Gerhardt, who was a Navy commander in charge of Simonstown.
Mm-hmm.
And little known to the South Africans at the time, he was actually a Russian spy. And he managed to get one of these helmets to the Russians.
Oh, wow. That disrupted and, things.
Which greatly developed, you know, the Russians' technology in on this type of thing. And in fact, this technology is still being developed in South Africa today. Technology is very different, obviously, over the years. But it's, you know, it's had its surroundings in South Africa.
You have written books. I mean, in 2013, you published a book called Tumult in the Clouds, which is the stories from the South African Air Force, 1920 to 2010. And you've also created and maintained an unofficial South African Air Force website. And, you know, I've been to the Military History Museum, the Imperial War Museum in Joburg a couple of times. I hope that they're looking after things there because, you know, there's so much of our heritage that's held in these museums and these places where we're supposed to have them preserved and cared for. And I just wonder if it isn't someone passionate like you, whether the people who are entrusted with this duty in various places, not just the Imperial War Museum, but all over the country, where we're meant to be cataloging, archiving, restoring, and maintaining our collections, it bothers me that they might not be the people who are as passionate as you are, for example. Do you often pop in there and just make sure that they're doing their job?
Well, I do try to pop in as much as I can. obviously, not to make sure they're doing their job, but
I have a solution. Sorry, Dean. Is change your helmet every time you go. You just pop in, they don't know who you are every time. You're just there walking around and you don't say a thing like the Stig.
I must try it the next time. I'll let you know how it goes.
Sorry.
It's amazing though that this website of yours, it's saairforce.co.za. I mean, really, you know, in any organized country, the Air Force themselves would have a website where they would have all this information and this stuff on. But it's you who has to do this.
That's right. Mm. I mean, I started the website, I say, in 94. Before the Defense Force, the Air Force had their own websites.
Wow.
Any later years did they start the websites. And if you go to the Air Force's website now, it's just a blank land page because of internal issues that cannot actually maintain their own website. So you're right. It is left to us enthusiasts to fly the flag. In no way, shape, or form are we harking back to the pre-94 days or anything like that. It's just from our love of aircraft, and that is what we don't. We're not lovers of war as such. We just love the technology, the flight, and have a passion for it, and we just want to share it with as many people as possible.
So Steve says, nice collection. I bet your most wanted ones would be the new F-35 and AH-64 helmets. Is that about right? Is Steve on the money?
He's spot on. In fact, you know, I'm also a correspondent for Defense Web.
Mm-hmm.
I write for them on naval and aviation matters. And so you come into contract with various other Air Force defense attaches and so on. And I must admit, the topic has come up of acquiring an F-35 helmet.
Is it easy to do?
I'm serious. They seem to think I'm joking for some reason. I'm not sure why, but
no.
Yeah. Are you ever going to be able to get these things, or are there people selling them on eBay, for example?
The current top of the line technology, you know, I think it's they cost a good few million dollars each.
Oh, right. Okay.
And in the tens of millions of dollars. I think that's slightly out of my price bracket.
Yeah.
And but I think that technology is very closely held for the moment.
Wow.
But I have seen, like, I mean, the Gripen helmets that the South Africans use, South Africans use also two different helmets, but the common everyday helmet I have seen for sale once or twice on eBay at a suitable price. And I looked, I cried, I closed the webpage.
Oh, wow. Just because the price is so high.
That's right.
Sure. Well, I wonder, I mean, you probably go to one of these Air Force bases and you'd probably just find some lying around if you looked hard enough, because we've really let our I'm sad to say we've let our military go to rack and ruin, and I don't think there's anyone actually keeping track of these things. You know, there used to be like quartermasters who would make absolutely sure that everything was accounted for, and that they kept track of all the stock. Now I don't think that happens much. Certainly, it doesn't happen to the degree where it's disciplined and orderly.
Yeah, so I think the Air Force is still ahead of the Army in that respect, because these are personal issue items. I mean, some of these helmets, you know, the guys have to fly overseas to have them fitted properly.
Really?
Because they're so advanced and they're suited to each individual pilot that all these items are actually on their personal names.
It's amazing.
And they're responsible for it. And with the move from squadron to squadron or something like that, they've got to account for these items.
Well, so, Dean, I have to tell you, this is fantastic. Just when we think we've covered all of the different areas that collections can go into, we meet someone like you who's brought in a completely different view and range of collection. So keep doing this. It's great to see. And I just love the fact that there are people like you who are making every part of you know, the collection world interesting. This is really, really cool. Keep up the collections. I hope it grows. I hope you get you know, a really nice cash injection so you can buy all those helmets that you don't already have. We keep writing. It's great to know that there are people who are also hugely passionate about these subjects and make it interesting for the rest of us.
No, thanks, Gareth and team. I really appreciate being on here.
No problem.
And been great fun, and I really enjoy sharing my hobby with everyone.
Very, very nice to see you. Thank you so much,
awesome.
Dean. There he is. There's Dean. And Dean, just quickly before I say goodbye to you, I see there's even a wing in your surname, Wingren.
Yes,
right? So it's
horses for
destiny. Destiny.
Yeah, there we are. It's meant to be. All right. Thank you very much, Dean Wingren, and his collection of helmets and flight equipment and flight suits. G suits, all kinds of cool stuff. Goggles, boots, gloves, headsets. He's got a whole lot. It's very, very cool. I just wonder.
G suits, G strings, the lot.
No, the G strings are your collection, Leanne.
No, but also he's an aviation guy. You know, listen, I don't care who you are as a girl. Once those guys, I mean, there's us guys who are dickheads in the street. And then when those proper military guys pitch up, I mean, G strings, he's got plenty of those. He's married now, obviously. He's throwing them away. But,
well,
but yeah.
Listen, I think it's really great.
That's awesome.
That you, here again, we're exposed to a collection. If you'd said to me, we're going to speak to someone who collects flight suits and helmets, I'd have said to you, you're not going to find one of those easily. So if you've got a really cool collection, you want to share it with us, please do let us know. Contact at cliffcentral.com. We would love to hear from you. And also, if you haven't already heard, you should get along to the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. You can check them out at scoinshop.com. Remember to message us on contact@cliffcentral.com for a chance to tell us about your collections. Very, very nice.
So you know what I loved about that one?
Hmm?
Sorry, before we move off, is that it's not like he's collecting basketball shoes or whatever, where in 2 years they'll make new ones and there'll be a new NBA draft and he'll have his own line and that.
Mm-hmm.
Is these are so incredible because they've been a part of the advancement and the breakdown of human history. You know, these helmets have been in places and been a part of history which may or may never happen again ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was then. You know, they're incredibly properly valuable right down to the philosophical point. So I hope he finds a young person who'll take it from him as well when he, you know, in 50 years time when he hangs the boots up.
Well, that's always the worry for any collector. I mean, it's not going to keep them up at night because they're really collecting for themselves. But a lot of these collectors that we've spoken to on Collectomania have all said, you know, we're not sure what's going to happen with our collection when we're gone. Because if you don't find someone who's as passionate as you are about this stuff, it's just a mess. It's, you know, it all will, it'll all just fall apart when you're gone. These collections need the people who care about them the most to be around. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. So apparently tomorrow's going to be quite chilly. That's what I've heard.
It was a bit chilly this morning. And remember the other day in Bolelo on Friday, I said that I was on a call with Cape Tonian, a Durbanite, and myself in Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, one was frying in the heat in Durban. I'm sure you experienced that, Gareth.
Yeah, Friday was great. What a day.
We were nice and warm in Gauteng, and Cape Tonians were wearing ski gear. And this morning definitely had a nip of a nip of cold in the air in Joburg.
Listen, I had a very nice day on Friday. It was magnificent, but the rest of it was pretty much overcast and or raining. So not perfect weather in terms of, you know, the maximum number of days in the sun. But I did also notice that the beach in Umhlanga is still not open. You can't swim in the water. They've got warnings up that the water is still toxic. They did, however, say they're probably going to open up in the next week or two, because they've been doing tests and they're checking that, you know, the water quality is improved and, you know, fish aren't dying and people won't grow third heads under their assholes or something like that. So we have to watch these things pretty carefully. But it's always nice to be down there. There's something about like KZN, and especially I've got to give credit, like just driving through, supposedly credits for God, right? Driving through the Midlands especially, and everywhere from really from Durban all the way to kind of Harry Smith is just beautiful. You've got these green rolling hills. You've got magnificent trees and forests and just these beautiful scenes. And then in the background on your right-hand side as you drive down to Natal, or if you're on your way back up to Gauteng on your left, is the Drakensberg just sort of looming in the background. It really is a beautiful part of the country. I absolutely love it. You don't need to give me any excuse to go down there.
And on that positive note, you know, South Africans, we do get down on ourselves, but it was also awesome on the other side of the country for me in the Western Cape. I was at the Cape Town Marathon. You know, it's so great to be around serious people. Like, people are not serious. 90% of the world is not serious. I was around serious people who did serious things this weekend. We put on a marathon and an event here in Cape Town that is as good as, and I've been to three of the other majors in the world. That is as good as, and definitely for me, better than the one here, right here in this country. Is we're capable when we get serious, and these people exist in South Africa. And South Africans doing world class things right here, and it was flipping awesome to be a part of it. Like flipping awesome to be world class production in South Africa. That's always just getting lashed by ourselves and others.
Yeah,
but it was an amazing weekend, man, and that means a lot to me. You know, is I am that annoying, like patriotic South African. It means a hell of a lot to me for South Africans to do things seriously, because I love serious people, and they are so rare, but they're out there. So positive on the East and the West Coast.
Amazing! That sounds beautiful. I'm very happy you said that, Bulela. What are the other three that you've done in the world?
Oh, well, I haven't run them, but I've been to London, and I've been to the Berlin Marathon. Mm-hmm. And then I've been to Boston.
Yeah. Wow. Well, those are the three biggest.
I haven't been to the others.
That's great stuff. Yeah. I saw political party posters up all over in Johannesburg, in Durban, in Umhlanga. I saw them on street polls. The IFP are campaigning hard in KZN. So are the ANC. I saw lots of Cyril posters. But I saw such a funny thing yesterday on the highway between Johannesburg and Pretoria. A whole lot of ANC posters had obviously fallen off a truck, and they were lying littered across the highway, and people were driving people were driving over them, and they were being torn to shreds. And I just thought that's so typical that the ANC should have a whole lot of their I mean, it's just it's like, you know, the irony of the ANC's posters being torn apart by cars driving over them at great speed just shows you in some metaphorical way how the ANC are falling apart themselves. And and this is a great poster I saw right under a sign for potholes. Tandega Charles, vote ANC, building a better Ward 48 together. Isn't that great? Right under a sign that says potholes. Yeah, fix those potholes first. Let's do that, and then we can worry about the rest of it. Don't you think? Anyway.
No.
South African politics.
Yeah,
you must vote for us, and then we are going to fix the potholes.
Mm, but not
we cannot
before.
Fix them until
not now. Yeah.
Yeah.
We must wait.
It's a procedure. Must Protocol wait. Must be observed.
Observed.
The voting must precede the potholing.
Yes. That's great. All right, everybody. Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock bright and early. Have a good week. It's a Monday. Start right. We'll see you tomorrow. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.